Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200. And it's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. And we are about to talk to Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we love to talk TV with Dan. We do it every couple of weeks, and we welcome Dan to the show. Hello, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, it looks like it. I've been looking at some of the stuff that you've been writing, and you've been watching a lot of TV.
It is what I do for a living, so I can't complain, but I do anyway.
Yes. Well, listen, let's talk a little bit about Take Me to the Pilots. Now, these aren't necessarily... explain what Take Me to the Pilots is, because they're not reviews.
They're definitely not reviews. I started doing these about 10 years ago. There's one mystery year that I can't figure out why I didn't do them, but 2009 I didn't do them. And basically... I'm watching the pilots anyway. I go through all of the pilots for all of the shows that premiere on the networks in the fall, and I'm taking notes on them anyway. And so basically I started doing sort of 200 to 250, maybe a little bit more word, basically paragraph blocks, just quick thoughts. You know, it's here's what my gut reaction is to these new shows. Eventually I will give them more thought. I will give them more consideration. I will rewatch every one of these pilots. I will watch as many episodes as the networks give me, but this is just a good way for me as a writer. It's an exercise to just start getting my thoughts down on all of the new shows, because there's so much content and there's so much to think about, and to Take Me to the Pilot series is just the way that I start that process.
Now, and what people need to know is pilots change considerably sometimes, often, correct?
They really do, and these days more than the pilots change, and certainly pilots do change. You look at over the years, and you know, major recasting on many pilots, whether it's something like DeGray Scott being replaced by Josh Hopkins on Quantico last year, or half the cast of Brothers and Sisters on ABC back in the day getting swapped in and out between pilots. It happens with some regularity. And
yeah, I mean, the one that I remember seeing the original pilot for, because I don't get to see all the pilots, obviously, was 30 Rock.
Okay.
Which was a huge difference. You know, I mean, obviously Rachel Dratch was a regular on 30 Rock in the pilot, and then was recast with Jane Krakowski.
And that was a very big difference, and that was a difference of conception, and I think that's sort of the interesting thing to look at these. So you look at the 30 Rock pilot, and it was Rachel Dratch, and basically they reconceived that part completely and totally between the original pilot and the eventual series. And I think they reconceived it in a way that allowed the show to have greater longevity. At the time, though, it seemed like it was, I don't want to say mean or cold, but it seemed as if Tina Fey was bringing Rachel Dratch along from SNL, and then she was pushing her out. And initially, if you go back and watch the 30 Rock episodes, Rachel Dratch popped up in a couple episodes early, and it looked like that was going to be kind of her role on the show, was that she was going to play random roles every few episodes,
right.
And then that ended up not happening. So, you know, but it happens with some regularity. It happens in much smaller ways. You know, okay, obviously everyone's going to notice when in an initial round of pictures, Rachel Dratch is in pictures from a TV show, and then suddenly it becomes Jane Krakowski when it becomes the series. That's very obvious.
Right.
But you start noticing, if you do what I do, the tweaks in tone and representation that shows do. They'll take a character who starts off being really grating and obnoxious, and that was the way that the writer initially conceived of the character. But then maybe because of the actor, it didn't play as well as they expected. Or maybe when they got it in front of an audience, a test audience usually in Las Vegas for no reason in particular, you know, the audience said, no, we'll go this far with this character, but not that far. And so the character gets softened. And sometimes it's rewriting. Sometimes it's trimming scenes, because sometimes these pilots are, you know, a minute or two longer than normal. There are a lot of changes, and so certainly I would never do full complete reviews of shows on the basis of these very provisional pilots, but the way I always figure it is there's a lot of money that the networks make selling the sizzle off of these to advertisers. I can give my gut reaction just as easily for free.
Yeah, that makes sense. But now in the years that you've been doing this, Dan, do you find yourself when you watch a pilot, do you find yourself at certain point? I mean, obviously, we'll talk about specific pilots that you wrote. Take me to the pilot stuff about. But do you find yourself noticing things and then going, I bet that changes, or I bet they cut this, or they change that? Do you, having seen so many pilots and the changes that they make, can you point out those things when you're watching?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the difference, the biggest difference between a Make Me to the Pilots blurb and an actual review that I'm going to do come September and October. In September and October, I'm reviewing final products. And I'm telling you, should you watch this or should you not watch this? A lot of times with the Take Me to the Pilots, what I'm doing is, here's what this is. Here's what it looks like to me. Here's what I would maybe be happy to see it become. Here's what it maybe will become that I wouldn't be happy about. But, here's what thing that doesn't work. Here's the thing that doesn't work. And, I don't expect that people in the industry are reading these things vociferously going, Dan says that this character is too strident, we must trim this. On the other hand, I think that if I notice things, other people notice them also. I think that, for the most part, intelligent people work at TV networks. Not always. I don't want to say 95%, but I think by and large. And so if I'm noticing something, the people who are making these shows are also noticing them. And so me saying, okay, here's something that clearly doesn't work, I don't expect that I'm the first person to make most of these observations.
Yeah.
And if I am, maybe it should be considered or not. I'm not infallible.
All right. Okay. Well, you did some Take Me to the Pilots here. Let's talk about Kevin Can Wait, which for my money has the dumbest title of a new show for this fall.
You sit there and you look at the title and you go, okay, I get the hilarious pun that you're making. Is it worth it? Is it really worth it? As opposed to just calling it, the freaking Kevin James Show.
All right.
Why not just call it the Kevin James Show? It's what they want people to take away. Why not just give it to them as opposed to making them process, is this a pun on Heaven Can Wait? What is it that this Kevin can wait for? Is Kevin James? It raises pointless questions that serve no purpose and offer no amusement. But
tell us about Kevin Can Wait, or at least the pilot. Your initial response to it.
My initial response to it, honestly, is that it's almost certainly exactly what CBS wants it to be. That it is Kevin James doing the things that Kevin James does well. If you think that Kevin James does those things well. And a lot of people do, and it's very much Kevin James in his wheelhouse. And is it great? No, but I think it could have been worse. In terms of the things that I would love to see changed on this one, boy, Erin Hayes is a talented actress, and she deserves better than just being the exasperated wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's impossible to do. This is something where it is a character shift that does not require extensive sweat or blood or pain or tears. You just need to go, okay, we have a very funny actress. What can we do to make her actually be funny?
Mm-hmm.
And either the network's going to want to do that, or they're going to say, look, this is, again, the Kevin James Show. And this is just his show, and people want to see him being rambunctious and his wife being disapproving. That's what people want.
And that's essentially the setup. I mean, like King of Queens, it is the exasperated wife and the funny big guy.
Pretty much. I mean, he's a police officer who is on the verge of retirement, and his wife is sort of curious as to how he's going to be spending his days, and she is, in the pilot, literally introduced telling him that he needs to rake the leaves. And once you have something that obvious, if that's what the writers want to do, that's on them. And who am I to say, because really this pilot's not being made for me.
And
I can say all day long, here's the kind of thing that I would like. if I'm going to be more enthusiastic about it, but no one cares.
So that's Kevin Can Wait. Now, who's creatively behind it? Is it the same production company as King?
It's not, but it's sort of familiar people. Bruce Helford is one of the creators, and he's just a sitcom standby. He co-created the Drew Carey Show. He worked on Roseanne. He worked on Wanda at Large. He worked on Anger Management with Charlie Sheen, which didn't go as well. You know, he's a multi-cam sitcom guy. He is without question, I would say, the perfect kind of person to work on the kind of show that I think CBS wants.
Got it.
Here.
All right.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know that it has aspirations beyond being what it is. And if that's what it is, that's what it is.
Okay. All right, Dan. Hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. He's great, and he's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We got lots more TV to talk about. We got to take a break here for the news, and we'll do that right after this on 720 WGN. All right. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are here on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday will begin in a little bit, so get your songs and your requests ready. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're also going to be talking about TV theme songs, some of the best TV theme songs, some of the worst TV theme songs. There's a story that's related to that we'll get to, and that's coming up. And speaking of TV, Dan Feinberg is currently with us. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He checks in with us every couple of weeks to talk TV, and that's what we're doing. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
Yeah, do you have a favorite TV theme song? Because they kind of don't exist really anymore, classic TV theme songs.
But it's such a pleasure, though, when one pops up that I find myself kind of overcompensating. Like, okay, this is utterly ridiculous, and you can't even find a good version of this on the internet. But the CW had a horrible reality show, dating show called Farmer Wants a Wife a couple years ago. And it had a genuine, here's the premise of the show, we're going to sing about it, opening credits song.
The classic TV theme song that tells you everything about the show.
And I dig those.
I do too.
Whether it's Patty Duke, whether it's, I'm not, Gilligan's Island is my favorite, but I'm not going to pick something that's not Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo. I like a good premise theme song, and they don't do them nearly enough. And I wish we had more premise theme songs in the world.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about TV themes a little bit later on. So I thought maybe I'd get your 2 cents on that. That's pretty fun.
Oh, sure.
All right. Well, let's get back to the Take Me to the Pilots, because a lot of people are curious about the things that will be debuting this fall. This is from NBC, The Good Place, with I love Kristen Bell. And the thing about Kristen Bell is, unfortunately, she has really been stuck in some crappy stuff recently, especially movie-wise.
She's tough. I mean, she's tough to know what to do with, because you look at her and, she's pint-sized, and certainly she's appealing in many different ways, but she's not, she's not what movie directors instantly think of as being what a movie star is. That's too bad, and it's their loss, and so she ought to, by that standard, be exactly what TV producers think a TV star should look like.
Yeah,
and I think she probably is.
The thing about her is that I'm just thinking about movies just recently. She was in that the Melissa McCarthy movie,
The Boss.
Yes, and she's in what looks like it's going to be one of the worst comedies ever. She's in Bad Moms, and the trailers look awful for that. But I just find her so appealing, and I love Veronica Mars, and
definitely.
I keep hoping for something great for her.
She had me watching. I watched House of Lies for her and Don Cheadle for at least a half season longer than I should have, and that means I watched for maybe 1.5 seasons.
That was
not a very good show.
Right. Agreed. So tell me about this, The Good Place.
It's I was pleasantly surprised by it. It's created by Mike Schur, who did Parks and Recreation, which featured in a cameo or guest role for a couple episodes at least, Kristen Bell being very funny.
Yeah.
So he knows the kind of things she can do. Basically, the plot is woman dies, finds herself in quote unquote the good place, not called heaven, and turns out she doesn't belong there. The pilot is a lot of information. It's a lot of here's what the rules are in heaven. And that makes it sort of a tough pilot, because it doesn't say, okay, now here's what the TV show is. And that's technically what a pilot generally is supposed to do. It's supposed to say, here's why you want to watch this every week. Mm-hmm. And the argument here is you want to watch it every week because Mike Schur is funny, because Kristen Bell is funny, and because Ted Danson, who is sort of a difficult to explain character who's kind of an angel, but not really. You want to watch it for those people, but you don't want to watch it necessarily because you're like, ooh, I can't wait to find out what's going to happen next week or whatever. You just figure, okay, funny people are going to be funny in a funny situation. Okay. And there's a lot of punchlines in this pilot, and a lot of them hit. And, my biggest recommendation in my taping of the pilots, which NBC already hasn't taken, and that's fine, is that I think probably this needs to air as a one-hour pilot. It needs to air with whatever episode two is. And I need to see what episode two is. I really hope this is one that NBC sends a couple episodes out on, because I really want a sense of what the week-to-week is on this. But, Mike Schur doesn't steer me wrong very often. Parks and Rec was great. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is great. So yeah. I expect I will be giving this one time to find its voice.
Yeah.
But for now, lots of potential.
Okay. And then Designated Survivor. We got one from CBS, one from NBC. Let's do one from ABC. Designated Survivor is Kiefer.
And that is what the show is.
Yeah.
The show is, are you gonna want to follow along as Kiefer Sutherland goes from nerd to president of the United States?
But I love the description a few weeks ago when you were on with us, and you said, "Well, this is Kiefer with glasses," and I think
like you've never seen him before, except that he has glasses in Dark City, doesn't he?
He does have glasses in Dark City. He certainly does. Yes, he does.
He's played kind of nerdy before, so this is not.
I think he has glasses, and I think he at one point. Or at some point he has glasses and Flatliners.
Sounds right. Because I mean, definitely. Well, they're all students in Flatliners.
Yeah, exactly.
he's played brainy people before, and thus right. We know that when Kiefer Sutherland puts on glasses, he is convincing as a nerd. So totally, and he's. I think he's really good, and he just really is totally one of those actors who you'll watch longer necessarily than the quality of the thing around them requires. And if I said that I watched a season and a half of House of Lies just because of Kristen Bell and Don Cheadle, I watched like four episodes of Fox's Touch. No, it's like probably like six or seven episodes, honestly. And
that's commitment, Dan.
and that's three or four episodes beyond what I needed to watch. And that was Kiefer in the first season. It was Gugu and Botha Raw. There were some interesting things in that first season. It just wasn't a good show. But so with this, the Kiefer Sutherland part works perfectly. There's an awful lot of other show to it, and I don't know that I buy the other show around Kiefer. And definitely going to need to see more of this, because ABC is really hyped on this one. They ordered it, and they've been promoting it aggressively, and the pilot is Kiefer, and Kiefer will keep me watching, but I'd really like the elements that aren't Kiefer to be a little bit more sturdy. And ABC's MO when it comes to drama is throw as much stuff on the screen and kind of distract the audience from the things that aren't working, and I would like for this to be better than that.
Okay. All right, well, that's a little bit of the Take Me to the Pilots. Kevin Can Wait, The Good Place, and Designated Survivor. And are these all, I mean, they've got the nights and everything all picked out for these shows already as well, right?
Yeah, these are all settled, and most of them have premiere dates. And realistically, if I were being a more helpful person with these, I would include that information in the Take Me to the Pilots entries. And that would just require 2 seconds of additional research when I was posting. And probably I should do that. But I am not to.
Okay.
So these are all fall. I start with the fall ones, and then eventually I make my way to the mid-season. And these are going to be going up on The Hollywood Reporter, on my blog, for the next couple of weeks, basically, as I make my way through, because TCA Press Tour starts in 3 weeks, and I have to make it through all of the pilots I have before then.
Okay. Man, that's a lot of stuff right there. Now, I have not watched The Night Of, the new HBO show. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, this is, the people behind this show are pretty amazing, Steve Zalian and Richard Price.
Yeah, once you start with Steve Zaillian and Richard Price, and they're, you know, this is not just two big name people who are doing an episode or two of this and dropping out, as so often happens on the show. It's not like Vinyl with Martin Scorsese directing the pilot and then basically never doing anything again. Yeah. Steve Zaillian directs every single episode but one of these, and the episode he didn't direct was directed by Man on Wire's James Marsh. So, you know,
yeah,
winner. That's
yeah.
Fine. And Price wrote, I believe, the first four episodes solo and the last four with Zaillian. So basically, Richard Price's name is on all of them. So, you know, that these are two big name people who made this full commitment to an 8-episode limited series. You know, they're presumably it's going to reach an end and that will be it. And yeah, it is based on a British format, and it follows a murder case from the commission of the crime, or the events around the commission of the crime, which involves a young Pakistani-American college student who has an evening of blackout partying with a mysterious girl he'd never met before and wakes up and finds her stabbed to death, and follows what happens to him as he progresses through lockup, as he makes his way to Rikers Island, interactions with detectives, with a lawyer played by John Turturro, and it just follows the case in depth. And HBO put the pilot up online a couple weeks ago, not just online, rather, but also on demand, and basically anywhere you can watch HBO.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. The pilot, or the first episode, or however you want to describe it, since the limited series, it's 79 minutes, and it's gripping, it's novelistic, it unfolds in a thoughtful and provocative way. Initially, you're just sort of tugged along a little bit. By the end of the 79 minutes, you're pretty much trapped in the story, and you're feeling compassion, you're feeling, you know, inquisitive, you're feeling outraged at parts of the system. It's a great start for a show. Now, critics have been sent 7 of 8 episodes, and I have to say that I was a little bit less convinced as it went along. The 6th and 7th episodes spend a lot of time on a trial that I was finding a little bit less original, a little bit less effectively presented, et cetera. But I was so involved by the first handful of episodes that I forgave the clunkiness of those later ones, I think, more than I would have if I hadn't been hooked so totally so early.
Well, now, what night is it actually airing? I know with HBO Go and on demand, it doesn't really matter at this point, but and DVRs. But if people want to set their DVR, when is the night of going to officially airing? What nights?
The night of is July 10th, so it's Sunday night.
Sunday.
And it's going to air at 9 o'clock, and yeah, that is when it's going to air. But again, since this is a limited series, and HBO isn't worried all that much about ratings when it comes to this. I mean, this one is a prestige play. This is like the David Simon Oscar Isaacs miniseries from last year,
yeah,
which was also terrific, but was in no way put out there as being like, oh, this is going to be a sensation. People are going to be all about housing in Yonkers. It's going to be huge. You know, be the next Game of Thrones will have dragons. Not like that. You know, it's like that in the sense that, okay, this is one we're putting out there because critics will like it, the audiences who watch it will like it, and 20 years from now, this will be something that will be worth having in our portfolio. And I like that,
yeah,
HBO is willing to do that.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. You know, I mean, obviously, Steven Zaillian has done some amazing work, and Richard Price is a tremendous writer who, you know, I don't know how many times, we haven't mentioned The Wire in a few appearances here, so I guess it's time to mention it since we're talking about Richard Price. Who wrote many phenomenal episodes of The Wire.
So. And since I just mentioned David Simon,
yeah,
and that miniseries. No, and I think it's very similar. In my review on The Hollywood Reporter, I talked about how it's another one of those kind of examinations of an institution, as much as it is a murder plot or a story. You know, this is about, okay, here are the pieces, here are the way the gears go together in this machine of the judicial system. Here's where maybe it's effective, maybe it's actually doing what it's supposed to do for justice. And here's where it slips off the gears. And
yeah.
Here's where people get lost. Here's where people with money get one kind of treatment and people without money get another treatment. Here's where people are prejudiced coming in, and those prejudices impact this, this, and this. Here's how you can avoid some of those prejudices. Here's how you can play the game. It's really very interesting. Having seen 7 but not 8, I don't know how it ends, and that's always a potential frustration when it comes to a mystery, because if it ends badly,
Yeah. That
kind of sours everything.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But even with my lack of full enthusiasm about the courtroom stuff at the end, I still recommend this one very, very highly.
Okay, that's the night of it. It premieres on HBO Sunday night. Okay, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He joins us every couple of weeks. We talk TV, writes for The Hollywood Reporter. All the stuff that we're talking about, he's actually written about at The Hollywood Reporter, and you can read it there and check it out at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more TV right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter and The Fine Print. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We talk TV every couple of weeks. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Hey, so I happen to be a huge nostalgic fan of game shows. At one time in my life, the Game Show Network, when they were actually showing old fantastic game shows, was like the most viewed channel that I had on in my cable. So I was more than a little excited about the return of Match Game and Pyramid to ABC. And to tell the truth, which I've not watched yet, Family Feud, they do the Celebrity Family Feud, but that's nothing. I mean, Steve Harvey has been part of Family Feud now forever, so that's nothing to be really as excited about. But, you know, the idea of having Pyramid come back, Match Game come back, I was very excited about it. And I got to say, you know, I've been having a good time watching it.
I have, too. I'm digging Match Game for what it's trying to be, and I'm digging Pyramid because Pyramid's just a fun game. I like that. That's one of those resilient formats, and I like the format of that one, and I like the way that they're trying to have fun with the format of
Match
Game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm having a good time. I think Match Game now is just filthy, though. I mean, like back in the 70s, there was double entendres, and they would have, you know, like pour some gravy on his blank, and then, inevitably you would giggle and then write mashed potatoes. But, you know, now there's like no double entendre at all, man. They're doing condom jokes. I mean, it's like it's like that. The innocence of the weird, you know, 70s is kind of out the window. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree that some of the double entendre has become single mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely true. But I think, like, in terms of general filthiness, if you know what people are saying, I don't think it's all that different. Like, I don't think the subtext has changed. I just think the text has become a little bit more overt. And I think, without any question, the text has become more overt.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there was... There was a lot of stuff that most of the viewers of the original Match Game were not getting or were not paying attention to, or everyone thought that they were the only people who got it.
Right.
I think that probably was a lot of what the pleasure was, and I don't think that's what this is. I think everybody's getting what Alec Baldwin and company are laying down, and I think it's airing at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. If you can't have a little bit of verging on adult fun, why not? And it's only verging. It's not it's not like it's horribly graphic or anything, but it's a little raunchy.
Yeah. And I love the I will say this, because I think Alec Baldwin does a nice job. The celebrities that they have on are, you know, consistently funny. And I can kind of see, you know, the roles that they're going to play if this continues. You know, obviously Rosie will be the go-to for your super match, and like almost every time she'll become like the Richard Dawson of the
much
panel.
Rosie, God, and she was on the first week of Pyramid
she
too,
was.
And she was excellent on that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Rosie is good at certain things, and I think we kind of lose track of how brilliant Rosie is at certain things because she's maybe sometimes annoying at other things,
right?
But you know, watching her that first week on Pyramid and this, you see that she is a certain kind of genius.
It was I agree with you 100%. And like having her and Kathy Najimy on that one episode of Pyramid was great. It was
and Sherry Shepherd. Sherry Shepherd was great.
Yeah, and so it was great. It was a lot of fun. They did a really good job. So how are they doing? Is ABC doing well with these?
I think ABC is happy with them. I think they're doing well as counter programming, you know, and ratings for these things, you know, they can get sampling and then they can fall off the cliff instantly. Like 2 weeks ago, Uncle Buck premiered on ABC and it was a hit. It was doing much better than anyone expected. And today it was canceled.
Exactly.
Because the audience just vanished. You know, people tune in. They're like, okay, that was not necessarily what I wanted to see. Let's not go there anymore because there are too many darn options for people who aren't me to watch things that they hate.
Yeah.
And, you know, good for people on that. And so, no, they're doing well, and they really are good counter-programming as long as ABC doesn't overexpose them. And I think that because they're not doing millionaire numbers, ABC doesn't have the temptation to try to do something ridiculous with
it.
So they're just airing on Sunday nights, and I think they're really satisfying on that. And you look at some of the people, you know, in a few weeks, Sarah Palin's going to be on, and I don't want to watch Sarah Palin do anything anywhere, but I want to watch Sarah Palin on Match Game.
She's going to be on Match Game?
She is, and that's going to be ridiculous.
Well, it's especially going to be ridiculous because Baldwin is the host.
Oh, it's going to be exactly what you want, and that's what, you know, that's what this is about. It's about giving us these moments, and so bless them for this.
Well, let me also say this, Dan. I'm enjoying the Match Game, the Pyramid stuff, simply because I'm now connecting with television with my parents. it's something I can actually talk about with my parents because they, you know, my parents both watch it and love it. And it's one of those things where, you know, like a 50-year-old guy can connect with the 70-year-old parents. So
we'll see that. And that's what I talk with my parents about, house repeats.
There you go. There you go.
because we can have conversations about whatever house repeat is on and which guest stars they were and when it fit into chronology all day. And yet I still can't get my parents to finish watching Breaking Bad, which, you know, one of these days they will.
And
you know, they're doing what they can, and I don't blame them for being slow, but
yeah,
got to get through Breaking Bad because I want to talk about season 4 and 5 of Breaking Bad with my parents, but those repeats are just more enticing.
I do get to talk about Big Brother with my mom. I will say that. And by the way, I noticed in your tweets you're actually watching this season.
I was going to say that was a very smooth transition, and it was a smoother transition than if you'd gone from the night of to Big Brother.
No, I know. And, you know, that's why I wanted to do the game shows first, but we have to break, Dan. News is next, though, on 720 WGN. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday. Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. Text them in for Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. We're going to get to some classic TV theme songs. That'll be coming up. Article about a news story that we're going to talk about and then get into classic and worst and best TV theme songs. We're talking TV right now with Dan Feinberg, who's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we are going to talk Big Brother now. I can finally talk to somebody about Big Brother. Hey, Dan, besides my mom.
Let's talk Big Brother.
Okay. I love the tweet that you put out. Just starting tonight's BB18, I resent that Jose is distracting attention from how annoying Bronte is.
and even now I'm convinced that Bronte is distracting attention from how annoying three other people are. There's a lot of annoyance.
Now, I will say this. I know you didn't watch season 17.
I did not.
Okay. And Tiffany is Vanessa's sister. Vanessa was on season 17, almost won. She came in third, and I was actually rooting for her, quite frankly. But I watched last night's episode. And have you watched last night's episode?
I have, yeah.
Okay. And as soon as she was put up on the block and started bawling and kind of like whining, I immediately had a flashback to last season with Vanessa. And then Davon is like, she's acting exactly like her sister. And it was so true. It just was a flashback. So I want you to know that she is acting exactly like her sister.
I do feel somewhat perturbed by how many tie-ins there are to last season. Like, I can't find James particularly funny. Am I supposed to find James entertaining?
Well, you know, it is definitely piggybacking of last season. There's no question about it. Like, if you don't know, you know, the antics of James and the style of which he plays, which is he doesn't really play the game very well, but he is ridiculous. He's entertaining and he pulls pranks on people. That's his role. That was his role last season. He wasn't a very smart player. He was one of these. He was a floater who made people laugh.
And I guess that's fine. But after the fifth time, he jumps out of somewhere in the dark and
yeah.
Goes,
well, Dan, that's the fifth time for you. It's the 90th time for anybody who watched last season.
I'm so glad I didn't watch last season because I really don't know if I could have dealt with the second season. Whereas in this case, it's just a minor irritant, and he really is not close to the most annoying person in the house at this point.
Who would you say is the most annoying? Who would you pick?
Okay, now, the past couple, really, the thing I like about this show is that it really does go back and forth episode to episode. Like, Paul, I thought Beardo Paul was awful for a while.
Me too.
And the last couple episodes, he's kind of seemed a little bit more intelligent and calculating, and so I've been like, okay,
that's so funny, Dan. That's exactly I had that realization last night watching this episode. I was like, well, he's not half as annoying as I thought he was because I hated him the first few.
I appreciated that, but then the episode before, you know, Victor went through like three episodes where he did nothing, and then he started crying about nothing in the episode on Sunday, and I was like, okay, well, you can be really annoying. Bronte's voice and her affectations of being sort of intelligent, maybe.
Yeah.
Except not really being intelligent in any way she's displayed. That's really irksome to me. Jose was awful. He was, you know, so glad he's gone. And if he gets brought back, God.
Yeah, I know.
I hate it when shows inflict twists like that. And they bring back people I hate.
Yep.
And I love it when they bring back people I like. So it's pure hypocrisy.
I feel the same way. Like I was a Top Chef when they added the Last Chance Kitchen to Top Chef. I was very, very angry until they brought back
exactly.
Somebody I liked. Yeah.
You know, like I think of the Top Chef, Last Chance Kitchen people, you know, if they've done it three or four times, they've definitely brought back one or two people who I was glad to have back. So great. But otherwise, it's annoying as heck. But I liked Nicole her first season, and so I'm I guess happy to have her back. And I understand that she may have many of the same problems as Bronte has. She's just got to them earlier, and therefore I accept them from her.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's very interesting. I mean, we're very early on still. You know, this thing goes till September, three nights a week, and some people.
And the longest time ever this season because it started a little bit earlier, so they're squishing them in for an extra week in the house or something.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And the problem with the show always is that it gets to be around the time of press tour, and then I lose 2 weeks or 3 weeks almost inevitably of episodes, and then I have to decide, okay, do I care enough to try catching up on the deep, rich mythology that has fallen apart while I've been gone?
Right.
And sometimes I decide yes, and sometimes I decide no. But I think I'll make it at least till then.
Okay. All right. Well, we can at least talk about it for another couple of weeks.
For sure.
All right. I want to talk about the 10 TV series you finally had to stop watching. Tell me about those.
Now, the first thing to note is a lot of these are shows that I should stop watching, shows that I need to stop watching, shows that I maybe say I'm going to stop watching.
Oh, okay.
But if there are 10 of the shows, I think the chances of my continuing to watch 4 or 5 of them at least are high because, again, second time in this segment, I'm a hypocrite, but I'm also compulsive, and this is kind of my job. So sometimes I will stick with things. But this was a list that we did because, you know, weeks are slow, and that's how you do these. And my colleague Tim Goodman did 10 shows to binge, and I did 10 shows to quit because, And so one of the ones on the list already was Vinyl, and I started writing it before HBO canceled it. So HBO quit for me. So
yes.
That is the easiest way to guarantee that I will not backslide on these shows is simply take them off the TV.
Right.
No, don't leave the choice up to me. and more of that, please, networks.
Yeah.
Cancel these shows if you need to.
Yeah, and I dumped vinyl pretty. I stayed with it longer than my friends did. I can tell you that. But
and you know, with you, because you are you're a music guy, and so either you were going to love it or you were going to be unable to stick with it.
Yeah.
And so, if the answer was the second, that's not surprising.
Right. All right, and you got Quantico on here.
I have Quantico, and Quantico almost certainly is one that I'll check back in on at the start of next season, if only because they're bringing in some new people, they're going with a new premise. It's an awful show, and so the thought process has mostly been I'm now no longer going to pretend that this is ever going to be anything other than what it is, which is awful, and maybe that will make it easier to either quit or just deal with on whatever level I need to. So like another show, Fear the Walking Dead is another show where once I accept that it's never actually going to be a good show, maybe that makes it easier to deal with it as this is a very, very bad show that I might have on in the background. But yeah, there are a number of shows like that on this list.
Yeah. And you've got Sleepy Hollow on here, which I thought I stopped watching Sleepy Hollow too, but for the first few episodes, I actually really enjoyed it.
It was an utterly charming show for its first season, and it got put on the shelf for too long. Fox decided they didn't want to overextend the producers in the first season, and so they let them do a short first season, and then they took the show off the air almost for a year before bringing it back.
Right.
And they never recovered the momentum. They never found a story that they could continue with, and they killed off a major character in the finale without whom the show doesn't interest me. And so, again, this is another one where I do suspect I will check in to watch the first episode to see how it becomes a different show. But it wasn't a good show anymore, really, for a couple seasons. And I don't really understand why they brought it back anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, the smarter idea on this one was always just to say, okay, then here's the end of the show.
Right.
We're sorry about the last few seasons. Try to think back on what it was in season one. But I'll probably check in and see if they can pick up the pieces. But I can't figure out a way that they would. I can't think of any evidence that they know what they're doing. So
also on this list, House of Cards, Amazing Race, So You Think You Can Dance, Modern Families. But I wanted to mention The Vampire Diaries, because as I read this, I read the first sentence of what you wrote. Hard to believe, but the CW Supernatural soap was once one of my favorite shows on all of TV?
True story.
Wow.
Totally true story. The second and third seasons of Vampire Diaries both made my top 10 for their respective years.
I do not remember that, but
this is it. This is at least partially because those were simply years with fewer TV. I would say probably that we've nearly doubled the quantity of TVs that's on since those first couple of years. But really and truly, in the second half of the first season through to almost the end of the third season, Vampire Diaries was just so much fun. It was a show that had five cliffhangers per episode that really twisted and turned with so much grace and so much cleverness, and gradually as it went along, it just became harder and harder for it to do, and I don't blame the show for that.
Yeah.
Keeping up with something like that, it's not easy, but the show was running on fumes this past year without Nina Dobrev, and to me, I would love for the CW to say, okay, here's your end date, or I would love for the producers to say, here's how many episodes we need to get to the end.
Yeah.
Because, I put enough time into this show. I'm really and truly, even though I'm saying I should quit, I'm not going to quit this one. But
right.
I would like for them to put a cap
Got it.
On it to say, here's Got what it. We need to get. Here's 13 or 22 episodes. Done.
Right.
And I think that would be the right way to do it.
Well, if you want to read the whole article, it's at HollywoodReporter.com. And you can also follow Dan on the fine print, F-I-E-N. One of the tweets that I wanted to mention very quickly before we let you go, Dan, you actually tweeted about one of my favorite movies, Beautiful Girls. And I love the tweet. It says, Beautiful Girls turns 20 this year, which is, first of all, astounding.
We're all old.
Yeah. It's better than at least a quarter of the Best Picture winners since. I totally agree. That's one of those movies, Dan, that's a remote dropper for me. If I come across it at any time, at any part of the running time, I will watch it. I adore that movie. I really do.
I went down to the gym. I had something else that I was going to be watching instead on my phone, and the main TV at the gym had Beautiful Girls playing, and I simply put down whatever I was going to watch and watched an hour of Beautiful Girls and was reminded again of how much cleverness, how much charm, and how much humanity that movie had.
I agree. And I miss Ted Demme every day. And Scott Rosenberg can be an amazing writer. And all of that came together with an incredible cast. And how amazing is Natalie Portman in that movie?
She's spectacular. Yeah. But you know, everyone in that cast. And it's a cast of people who are hit and miss actors in so yeah. many cases. But every single one of them is perfect.
I agree. And you know what? To bring it full circle, Dan, Rosie O'Donnell is great in that movie.
Absolutely.
There you go.
And the funny thing is, that scene that they have walking through the store,
yeah.
I don't think you could do that today. I don't think it would be believable for some reason, yeah. but totally believable in this context.
Agreed. All right, Dan, always a pleasure to talk to you, man. And, you know, we're going to have a special visit from you with your reactions to the nominations, the Emmy nominations on Thursday night, Friday morning, next Friday morning.
Indeed, I am looking forward to being highly annoyed.
Okay. Well, there's a plug for you right there. Okay, Dan, thanks, buddy.
Talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Yeah, he's going to join us for a special quick guest appearance next Friday morning because the Emmy nominations are announced Thursday morning, July 14th, and so we'll have Dan in for his reaction to that, and then in his regular visit as well. All right, always fun to talk to Dan Feinberg. We'll take a break here on WGN.